Well, it's been a blessing to be back here today. Got a good lunch with Pastor and his wife. And I just want to say thank you to this church in particular who has supported us from the very beginning. I looked at my notes. I don't have the exact date, but it was on deputation, but I don't know exactly when y'all began to take us on and to pray for us. But it's made a difference. I want to thank this church also for your pastor, as we talked at lunch. I've mentioned different times that it's a little bit scary for a missionary when you come back from the field and you've had the pastoral changes, and I've got, I think it's five or six this time that we'll meet for the first time, and you never know who you're going to be meeting. You don't know exactly how they're looking at things. You don't know how much the direction of the church has changed, if at all. This is a church where it hasn't changed at all. You're still following the Lord, and we are very thankful. Open your Bibles, please, to Exodus chapter 3. We'll actually look at chapter 2 for a little bit. Simple message. It's more of a talk than an exegetical exercise from the scriptures. Why don't believers get involved in missions? First thing I need to do is define what missions is. Some years ago, I think it was when we were on deputation, if I remember correctly, we going around different churches and began to see something. I don't remember exactly which mission board it was that did this. I would give them credit if it was. It may have been BIMI, but anyway. They had sent out a little placard, or developed a little placard, and a lot of churches took it, and they put it right on the above the exit doors from the auditorium. And some of you may remember what it says. Know where I'm going already. You are now entering the mission field. And that's the reality. But there's a reality a little bit beyond that. That's this. Sometimes the mission field is right in here. You got some good people coming that aren't necessarily all saved. I won't explain things that happened in my home church in Tulsa over the last number of years, but that truth became very evident. Not everybody that's been coming for decades was saved, or at least not sanctified. Why don't we get involved in missions? What are we afraid of? What is it that's about missions, or evangelism, if you want to put it that way, because it works the same way, that we're scared of? Being made fun of, going overseas, and I've got enough problems as it is being from Oklahoma the way I talk. I'll try that in Romania. Now, I did go to southern Romania. That should help, but no, that didn't help at all. You know, people are going to laugh at you. They're going to take you for a fool. I had a guy one time, he had found a starter, I guess it was. He cleaned it up, painted it blue, and said, "Here, I've got a new piece for your..." I had an Isuzu Trooper at the time. He said, "I've got a new piece. It's a reserve for you. I won't charge you very much." And very sanctimoniously, I said, "Where'd you steal that from?" And his friend next to him busted up laughing. He thought I was a fool. And in many ways, I am, but not like that. What are we afraid of? You get out of your comfort zone. When I first got to Romania, literally, I got off the plane in Bucharest. It's June. It was in June. It was a hot June. The guys in the church that we were going to be working with were there to pick me up. We drove 2 hours to Slatina, and as we're pulling into the town, and it's, I've been on the plane for 24 hours, pulling into town, and Danutz, who ended up being one of my best friends over there, leaned forward, puts his hand on my shoulder and says, "Welcome to your new home." And it scared me to death. If I could have, literally, I think I would almost have done it. If I could have opened that door and fallen out and landed in Tulsa, I'd have done it. I was that whatever. That's real. That's realistic. What are we scared of? There's a couple named Hill and Diane Ballou. They are retired relatively comfortably. And there's a problem that missionaries sometimes have, and that is this: who takes care of the home front when you're gone? Not the church, your house, your togs, your pets, whatever. The lawn, who's going to mow it? How do you take care of all that? We've always had that worked out. If you live in an apartment, you just close and lock the door and you're good to go. But when you're in a house, it's different. A couple years ago, well, last time we did furlough in 2019, thank you. When we visited our southern churches, we had that problem. What are we going to do? Because the dog was still alive, the grass was still growing. So Lynn had this brilliant idea, which I thought was absolutely nuts. Call Hill and Diane and see if they'll come over and sit here for 3 months. You know, then being gone 5 months, that just leaves 2 months for the remaining friends to take care of. I said, they're not going to do that. Are you kidding? So we called them, and they did. And I got to thinking, I wonder how much of a ministry that might be. How sending for missionaries? You know, somebody's got to take care of things, and you can't always just dump it on the nationals that you're working with. They came over. Now, it takes a unique couple, and Hill and Diane, Dave's about as unique as they're going to get. They are southern to the core, but they love every kind of food. I mean, the second day they're there, they're going to some restaurants I wouldn't dare go into. And they had a ball. Our people, they are now quasi-officially members of our church. And our people still ask about it. In fact, we send out Florine Vlase does a daily little prayer thing. He quotes it, makes a quote from or types in a quote on the WhatsApp thing for us from Spurgeon, and then makes a little comment about it. And everybody says amen, 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 amen. And some expand on it a little more than that. But Diane and Hill always comment on that. They take it through Google Translate, and they know what's going on, and they're still part of us, and the people love them. Why don't we get involved in missions? Well, Moses had that problem a little bit in chapter 2, actually, backing up to verse 11. When Moses was grown, somehow the Bible tells us in Acts chapter 7, verse 25, when Stephen is preaching just before they kill him, that Moses understood that he was to lead the people of Israel out. He's 40 years old now. He's as strong as an ox. Legends talk about him in different places. That one of the legends, there may be some truth to it, is that he led the Egyptians against a mighty Ethiopian army back in those days, and they conquered the Ethiopians. And there's just some legends about him, but he's a tough guy. You know, you don't have to worry about it. He would have been a Marine, right? I hope I'm not in trouble. He has an idea of what his mission is supposed to be, going to lead the people out. He goes out there and he tries to get things going, and it doesn't work out. Sometimes we serve God in various reasons, not nearly as spectacular as this, but in various manners, and it doesn't work out. And then what do we do? It didn't turn out like he expected. I give with this message, I always give an illustration from my parents. I need to stay close to this thing, sorry. We were in a Baptist convention church years ago. I was in high school. Mom and Dad never really served a lot. They kind of tried, but they got into something that they could do, and that was going to a nursing home and bringing some elderly to the church. And it was kind of neat, really. Well, I don't know exactly the timing anymore in the process of it, but they came to the church one day. They had 3 or 4 or 5 elderly in wheelchairs, and the church is massive. It's 5 times the size of this place, maybe even more, and it's got a big balcony. And they bring them into the auditorium and wheel them down front. They end up just right down here, there's lots of open space down front because it's a big church, and they take them right down there, and the old folks are just away. Wow, this is so beautiful. It's, you know, the old 70s wood interior. It wasn't all that wonderful, but anyhow, they just thought it was fantastic. Well, some deacon in that church decided that didn't look good to have old people down front, so he got Mom and Dad and their helpers and said, get the people out of here. They had to take them back out and put them in the kids' services. And there was about 300 or 400 kids in there. You know how kids are in church service? Loud. That was the last time I saw Dad serve the Lord. A little bit later, he got past that, but that was discouraging, even to me. I didn't like that at all. What does it take to discourage you? I mentioned this, I don't know where I mentioned it here, talking to somebody. In Romania in the 90s, 75 to 80 missionaries went into that initial wave. I was one of them. And that's one of the reasons I really struggled about going. I didn't think I had any business going there. They came in with various ideas, I'm talking about independent fundamental Baptist, but that's kind of a broad term. And today, there's only three of us left. And every reason under the sun, you can find listed as reasons they, various ones left. But the smallest category would be those who came, won people to Christ, trained them, established a church, trained a pastor, and left a fully functional church. I can count those churches on less than one hand where that actually happened. The others just left. When you see that, it's not really encouraging, is it? I mean, we want to see all the hallelujah, things are going great kind of stuff. The reality is things don't always go so wonderful. Okay, it didn't go so wonderful. What are you going to do about it, Dan? Well, I told you one time, I know what I'm going to do about it. I quit too. And I did. I'll give just a little bit about that. It was about 17, 18 years ago. We were working with a Bible college, and things weren't going as much as we cared for that as well. And there were various problems, including some of the students that they were letting in who, some of them didn't have an eighth grade education. They're trying to do basically Bible Institute level work, and they couldn't do it. But we went on furlough. We came back home, went back home on furlough. Back home means over there. And we get into the house, and Romanians had lived there for us to look after the place. That was one of the solutions that we had to that problem at that time. And we get in there, and in the first 2 days, I catch about six mice. We begin to look around, and we make some discoveries. All of Lynn's clothing had been worn and put up dirty. Articles of clothing were missing. My tools were missing. Some of my tools were missing. Go out to the village, and I see, my mom had given me a very nice down-filled vest, winter vest. And I see a Romanian lady in the village that were working and wearing it. And her kids had been part of those who had lived in our house while we were gone when they weren't supposed to be living there. And several things like that. I turned to Lynn one evening, or one afternoon, and I said, just in a weak moment, I said, man, I'm about ready just to pack up the bags and go home. And it scared me when she said, you say the word and I'll start packing. I didn't expect that kind of response. That's where we were. I said, well, it was summertime. I said, well, we're already signed up to go to, our board had a mission retreat in Germany, and we're already signed up for that. So we'll go to that, and we'll see how that goes, and then we'll come back and see what we're going to do. And it was at that meeting, a man named Dave Pendleton, who's a pastor at the time. He's not in the ministry anymore. Not for something bad, just he's not in the ministry anymore. And he preached. And in that week, God gave me a love for my villagers, my Romanian pastor I was working with, and the villages around Lugoj. And I was determined, okay, we're going to go back, forget the Bible college. They don't really need me. It's going on, but it's a really small group. We're going to focus on the villages for the rest of my life. And that's what we went back intending to do. And we're loving it. The people who had stolen from us, they'd given away our silverware. They had broken things. Some of them had sinned in our home. I had a love for them, and in a sense I still do. And it was fine. See, that's what you need when you get discouraged. Is you need to put yourself on purpose, maybe, in the place where God can use the Word of God through a friend, through a preacher, through whatever, to get you back on track, focusing on Him and not all these things. You know, we always talk about these things, how unimportant these things are, until these things are disturbed and stolen or broken, and suddenly this little thing was really important. And then we realize that maybe our focus isn't exactly what it's supposed to be. Or we get discouraged for different reasons. I'm probably going to spend all my time on just the first point here, but here's a question. This is a theoretical question, and it doesn't apply to most of us, but the idea is still there. Would you serve the Lord if you knew you would die before the age of 30. If you knew you had very limited period of time, what would you do with it? Would you serve him with everything you have? On July 3rd, this past July 3rd, a man named Ben Ramers died at the age of 24. Killed in a tragic accident on the 3rd of July when a teenage girl had a dog in the front seat of the pickup with her, and the dog got scared by the fireworks, and she lost control of the truck, and she plowed into a crowd of people, killing Ben and seriously injuring his sister. He was 24. I probably had met him as a kid because this happened in one of our supporting churches up north. But I didn't really know him. And then I began to read about him, the impact he had, the seriousness of the walk with the Lord. And he died at 24. And there's some famous individuals. Robert Murray McShane, he died at the age of 30. He was a minister in the Church of Scotland. We're using, I don't have it with me, but in our church over there, we're using his reading through the Bible program that he put together for his church. He knew the Bible so well by the age of 30 that he could divide it up into four columns, and there's a chapter or two, depends on, especially in the Psalms, you might read two or three on a day, throughout the whole thing. And he organized it so well. I want to use it again next year. It's just, you know, his walk with the Lord was amazing. David Brainerd, we all know him, American Presbyterian minister who worked with the natives. He died at the age of 30. One that speaks to me a little bit just because this happened in the year that I was born, 7 months before I was born. Jim Elliott died at the age of 28, and we all know his name. And we had opportunity at our home church in Tulsa, Oklahoma, at Tulsa Baptist Temple, to meet Rachel Saint, Nate Saints, who I think he was the pilot, or at least he was part of that crew. His sister, we met Rachel Saint. She was a different person. She came very humbly dressed and never married. She told us that she had been praying to God about a husband to continue the ministry. And finally, the Lord told her one time, said, you know, she was saying, God, give me a husband. Call a man. And finally, the Lord said, I called him. He said, no. So she served the Aka Indians as a single lady, along with Elizabeth Elliott and whoever else was there, for the rest of her life. What would you do, or how do you feel? This didn't happen too many years ago. A guy named Charles Wesco, he was a missionary to Cameroon. Tens of thousands of dollars were spent to get him there. 12 days after he's there, he was shot and killed, leaving his kids, and one of his sons was in the back seat with him. A shotgun had gone through a bad area. Somebody leveled a shotgun towards the car. It took him out. Nobody else in the car was hurt. Been there 12 days. We won't know until we get to heaven what that was all about. I mean, that sounds like such a waste. And I read a little bit, I don't remember the details, but I read a little bit about his life. And, you know, this was a dynamic young man serving the Lord here in the States, and then he was just going to transfer that over there, and it's over. Well, what about a man like, I name names because these are personal friends, Gene Mumford, missionary in France for almost 50 years. On the first day of retirement a couple years ago, he died. I remember hearing that, and, you know, sometimes you can almost have two thoughts at the same time, or they come in such rapid succession, you don't know which one was first. And the first thought was, man, what a retirement. He has grandkids here in the States, and now he's dead. Yeah, what a retirement. Heaven's a pretty good retirement plan. He didn't plan it that way. He had cancer, and they kind of knew it was coming. It was getting bad. But, you know, or how about a man like Ray Virtue, missionary in Germany for 38 years, I think it was. One church. It took him 38 years. And maybe he could have got out a little earlier. 38 years to establish one rock-solid, independent, fundamental Baptist church in Hamburg, Germany. And 3 or 4 years before he passed away, They started a mission work in Lukau, another village or town, smaller town. And he has a young man there working in that. But, you know, the typical results that we like to see are more like Elmer Deal. He was out of my home church. He was an airline mechanic for American Airlines in Tulsa. He went to Africa in the early 60s. He was there for the revolution. I believe it was in the Congo. Is that right? He literally was on the floor with bullets passing over his head just a few inches during the revolution. He was there longer than he should have been. He was supposed to retire, and he'd come back and retire for about 3 months, then go back over there for 6 months, and back and forth. He planted about 180 churches in Africa, in various villages all around his place. He was more comfortable in Swahili than he was in English towards the end. See, that's what we typically think of, and that's what we get all excited about. What we need to get excited about is fulfilling God's will wherever you're sent. We're not all sent to places like that. We're not all cut out for places like that. Romania has not turned out to be the kind of mission field that people expected. People were lining up in the early days not to get saved, but to get that Bible they're handing out at the end of the evangelistic campaign so they could take it to the market next day and sell it. And that's what they were doing. And there were many people, there was a curiosity, because literally Ceausescu, when they confiscated Bibles, he would turn them into toilet paper. And so there was a mystique about it. Not so much anymore. Do we get discouraged when discouraging things happen? We shouldn't. We really shouldn't. We ought to be at least intellectually aware enough, even though the emotions are driving us nuts, intellectually aware enough to realize what's going on and to buckle down and say, I'm going to stick it out, because God's in control. He knew what's coming. He knows what's going to happen. He put me here on purpose. I'm not quitting. Now, you may be led on to another place, and that's what happened when we were in Stuka. After I decided, okay, we're going to stick it out here for the rest of our lives in the villages. And then after that, when I got that settled in my heart before God, he said, okay, now, next step. And then he moved us again. And we didn't see that coming. We really hadn't. And that led to where we are now. That next move was into another town to, again, teach in a Bible Institute. And I went to a church of 42 people, six, not pastors, but preachers. They didn't need me. And I said, what am I doing here? But I got the verses, I can tell you. God led me there. What I didn't know at the time is to make an introduction between us and the Sente family. That's the folks we're working with right now. To prepare us to move to Hunedoara. God had that planned. So it was a big triangle, or a V, whatever, to get down there. But that's where we are. That's where we'll be until we're done. So yeah, you know, sometimes it doesn't work out like we think it will. But God knows all about it. Obviously, I'm not going to finish like I planned, but a couple of thoughts here. For me, Exodus chapter 3, verses 2 and 3, we see that in that passage there where Moses had met the Lord. He sees the bush burning, and he goes over to check it out, see what's going on. The Bible doesn't tell us anything about that 40-year gap between the time that he killed the Egyptian and when he's called again. Now he's 80 years old, just as strong as he was when he was 40. Doesn't tell us what's been going on. But I just put the thought this way. Two different ways I wrote this message. One is positive, one is negative. The negative is, why aren't we involved in missions? Well, it's because we haven't been meeting with God. We're not where God is. We're going to flip it out on the positive. Why are we interested in missions? Because we've been meeting with God. We're ready to see him work. Are we? Even if it's going to cost you something. Murdiwata, I mentioned her in the video this morning. She's the one that led the 87-year-old woman, Pusha, to the Lord. Murdiwata is a piece of work. She is a nut. She's from the Motz people, so she's a Mwatsa, and we have fun with it. She was married at the age of 16, willingly, to a man that was in his mid-20s. And he was very kind to her. This is long before she was saved. She was widowed at the age of 39 with two daughters, I believe it is. Just two daughters. And she had to learn to make it on her own. She ended up going to Spain and working for 10 years in house cleaning and whatnot. But she broke her foot about a number of years ago by the time she came back to Romania because she could no longer do the work. And we met her. There's a lady, I don't know if she's still alive or not, probably not. Her name is Moldovianu. I don't know her first name. She is the sister of Nicolae Moldovianu. I mentioned him. He was Romania's hymn writer, the one that was in prison for writing hymns that, you know, I met a couple times. He had been beaten. He had a broken arm. It didn't work right when he played the piano. That when we were there, it was just kind of, you know, this and then moving it kind of awkwardly. He captivated our teens and us so well for 4 hours. Even Sam and Brianna, when they were 4 years old, sat quietly for 4 hours as we sang his hymns and listened to his testimonies about what it was like in prison. That was the Spirit of God. His sister is from Hunedoara. His sister had met Mariwara, had led her to the Lord. And one time, she came to one of our services when we were in the storefront over there. And after that, when Mariwara was coming back, having broke her foot, Sister Moldovianu hooked up again with Mariwara. And she said, they talked a little bit, and she recommended Mariwara come to our church. Now, when I say that, I'm bragging. Because of the name association, but mostly I'm thrilled that she saw something in us and she recommended us over anything else over there. So Mariwara started coming. She wanted to get baptized and we had to work with her to understand what that means because she'd been going to Pentecostal church in Spain for a while. But Mariwara loves the Lord. She's been spending time with him. And she's got personality just spills out her all over the place. And she talks to people, brings them when they can. You know, they don't really want to be seen going into that building. God's going to fix that one of these days. We went from a storefront, which was probably square footage, about as much room as we have on this platform, just a bit more rectangular, to a huge building. And we put offers on two other buildings. Offers were accepted. And just before we get ready to go sign the papers, we find out that the guy sold it to somebody else for the same price. And then this thing came up. We got two and a half times more building and land than the previous building that we had offered to buy in a better location. Right behind the fire station. Everybody knows where it is. Why? Just so we can brag. We have the first floor. You have the second floor in the balcony. Above that, we have a third floor, which is actually an attic. And between the ceiling of the first floor and the balcony attic thing, we've got about maybe 4 feet of white space. When we can get it done, when we get to the point, and maybe this summer, we're going to be putting the name of the church across there in bold letters. And there are some tower apartments across from us. They're going to see us every day. And I don't know what verse we're going to use there, but we're going to put in some smaller letters a verse across there. People are going to know who we are. They already, in a sense, know who we are, that we're there. They don't know, haven't figured a lot of things out about us yet, no matter how much you talk to them. Why aren't we involved in missions? I mean, it's exciting what the Lord's doing. And I met a young man in southern Indiana a few weeks ago. He is, his mission, his, the call that he has is going to be very simple. It's going to be fewer people saved and all that. The Lord's calling him to be a bush pilot in Alaska. Why would you do that? Well, if you called, you called. He made a survey trip up there, and he has some contacts, and He went up there, and there's a little church that's been without a pastor for 15, 20 years, a long, long, long time. And he went up there to visit the church where would be working and all that. And he walks into this church, and this sweet little Christian lady walks into him and says, "Are you going to be our new pastor, please?" Yeah, why not? It's hard for him to get support for something like that because it's not as exciting enough. But you know, if the churches are praying for God's will and the missionaries praying for God's will, they're going to mesh in his time. And his time may be a little bit longer than other situations. That's God's business. But you know, the greatest thing that we can do on earth is be involved in missions, whether it be in this room or out those doors or over the ocean, wherever. There's nothing better in this life. Now, we've only got average, I don't know what the average is in America anymore. I heard it's dropped several years. If it's 80, 75, average lifespan. You think about that. You know, that's just not quite as long as eternity. So, why do we get so worked up about the things of this world? And church is a Sunday thing that we do, primarily Sunday morning, Sunday nights. Y'all understand, and I'm not criticizing. That's just where we are. There's nothing greater than serving the Lord. There's nothing greater than going to bed at night on Sunday night in Hunedoara. And the morning service lasted an hour and a half. And the fellowship afterwards lasted an hour and a half. Not planned, it just worked out that way. You go to the evening service, it lasted an hour. And the fellowship afterwards lasted an hour and a half. It wasn't planned, it just worked out that way. See, all of our people are first-generation Christians. When they leave us and go home, they're going back into that world. So it is a relief to be in church. And we, you know, we used to have prayer meeting every day of the week, in this sense. Sunday, regular services, we're praying. Monday evening, we're praying. Tuesday evening, we're praying. Wednesday evening, we're praying. Thursday is our midweek service. Friday, we'd meet for prayer. Saturday was cleaning day at the church, and then we'd pray. Every day of the week, we were praying, and we had no problem keeping people coming. Now, obviously, men that are working can't do it, and women that are working can't do it. They got families and all that stuff, but it's really kind of neat to be in that environment. We just have a hard time listening to the voice of the Lord. This is what Moses was hearing in the verse 4. And he heard the voice of the Lord. I need to wrap it up because I understand you've got to get to work and get the kids in bed and things like that. What holds us back? Well, for this group that's here tonight, not much. I mean, you're here tonight. We drove up, when we left the hotel, it was nice and sunny and quiet and no wind. And it was wonderful. And we get on the highway and it don't look so wonderful. And then the wind hit us. Literally, it blew the van, you know. And then we drove through it. We got here and the worst of it had already passed over and didn't look so wonderful. We went through that. That's nothing. I've been in tornadoes. That was nothing. God has done so much for us, and we have a really hard time doing some things for him. It's just amazing to me. But as they say, you know, I'm preaching to the choir. You're here because you can be. Some others would be if they could. Some have to work this evening. I understand that. But that's not the touchstone. The touchstone is this. What are we going to be doing when we leave these doors? What are we doing day to day? Are we spending time with the Lord? I know it's busy here in America. Good grief, it's busy. Too busy. One of the blessings of being in Romania is life is slow. So we have time to have devotions for 2 or 3 hours in the morning. It may sound lazy sometimes, but you know, my wife has often not through the shower and ready for the day until about 12 o'clock because she has spent several hours in Bible study and reading and praying. And I know she's praying for me because I ain't dead yet. I mean, it hasn't. In fact, I'm glad I kind of brought that up in a backdoor way. Several of you have mentioned to us that you've been praying for us for all these years. You know, we know that. Didn't know who. But when we look at and analyze some things that have happened, and at different times, I know I've said it and Lynn has said it too, somebody's praying for us. Just sometimes little things that might be going on, sometimes bigger things, like the building. I mean, getting that building, as opposed to the others that we wanted to buy, that weren't half the size, at the same price, basically. And twice, 2.5 times as much land, 18,000 square feet. I've already told them, said, you know, we need to start figuring out how we're going to build a new auditorium. And we've got room for 100 now, if we pack them in, where we preach that now. Not by American standards, but by Romanian standards, we'll pack them in. I'm hoping we see something that you read about in history books, that God does something amazing. Not to be written up in a history book. Nobody can spell my last name anyhow. And most of them can't pronounce it any right, or even get close. Pastor done just exactly right. But there's nothing greater than serving the Lord, wherever it is. I lost a lot of time as a teenager because I was an idiot. Thought motorcycles was more important than church. Thought rugby was more important than church. And some other things that I won't mention. There's nothing more important than serving the Lord. There's nothing more satisfying than serving the Lord. So be a missionary wherever you live. Pastor, thank you.
We'll take your hymn book and turn to number 400. As we close tonight, let's sing.